Well, hello. It's nice to see you all again. So before I want to tell you what we are doing today, I wanted to tell you about, La Casa de Maria got badly wounded in this mudslide. I think they lost five houses. And so we will have an interfaith benefit for La Casa on the 25th. At Trinity Episcopal Church from 2:30 to 6, and there will be people like Rabbi Arthur Gross Schaefer, Rabbi Steve Cohen, Imam Niazi, there will be Susan Dunn and Jeanette Love. We actually planned it together with the two of them, and we'll have a tizé part. I had this vision in one of my meditations, I thought, wouldn't it be great to have an afternoon with tizé and meditation? And so then I, thought, oh, and actually so it happened. So it's happened. So we will have an afternoon with tizé, and I just love the tizé music and meditation and other wonderful musicians, some meditation. So on the 25th, save the date. Flyers are on the table. And also the other mudslide related thing, I for 15 years was teaching at La Casa de Maria mindfulness meditation, and that's not possible anymore. And I got so many emails, now we really need it, and now it's not there, because Montecito will take a long time to be rebuilt. And hi, Dennis. And so I got an invitation from the Sacred Space in Summerland. It's this little bookstore. They have antiques. They have all kinds of things. And they have a great room in the back for speakers. And so I was there last Thursday the first time, and 50 people showed up. It was like kind of, and people are really quite traumatized still from what's happening. So I just want to let you know, if you know anybody who would benefit from meditation, a little talk, sometimes we bring some music in. It's at 6 o'clock on Thursday. And because in Buddhist philosophy we say compassion, is the feeling of our hearts of when we witness another's suffering. And then, but the near enemy of compassion is despair. We could easily fall into despair. And the antidote to that is joy. And so the thing I realized recently is that it's actually really great to not only have meditation and be very austere, but to bring some beauty in, some music. We have a bunch of really amazing musicians, and so we'll bring together compassion and joy. So that's what we also will do at the benefit. So today we'll talk about this book by the Cry of the Earth and Spiritual Ecology and Joanna's chapter, The Greening of the Self. And Joanna has been really Michael Carney, probably know my husband and my mentor for many years. I actually think she really loves Michael. She likes me too, but she's just really, you know Michael, he's just very reassuring, and she calls him all the time. And so, and now over the years I actually have a great relationship with her too, but I think it was due to him that somehow I got this amazing road into a relationship with Joanna Macy. And I always had from my background as a post-war German this, what did Elie Wiesel say, the good Germans, those who didn't kill anybody, I guess, they maybe are not guilty, but they are responsible. And I always took that very serious. You know, I think there is a truth to that, and especially now with social and environmental decay, I just feel, you know, we have to at least try to do something. And it's in a way the bodhisattva path. You know, we don't know the outcome. Maybe it doesn't even matter. You know, yes, we want to have a good outcome, but we just have to do what we do regardless. And then, in a way, we preserve our own integrity. And also, it's a more free experience of giving and sharing. And so this is really what this article today is about the greening of the self and about interdependence, about dependent co-arising, which is a really important thought in Buddhist philosophy. And I think, you know, even though this philosophy is Buddhist, I think it kind of, how would you say, mixes and matches with all other kinds of spirituality. It's just part of what helps us heal and grow. So what I'll do today is I will talk a little bit about interdependence and the greening of the self, and kind of what Joanna Macy encourages us to do, to rethink our notion of self. And then I thought I'll do a meditation with you, as I always do, a meditation that helps us to have a sense of interdependence. And so kind of, I always think the direct experience is so important. You know, it's as important as great thought. So, and then after the break, I hope we will have time for all of this. You know, one thing that Joanna does are these amazing exercises. You know, she, if you look at her books, The Work That Reconnects, she really tries to mediate the experience of engagement, of active engagement, through a lot of exercises. And so I thought I will do one of Joanna's exercises with you after the break. It's about deep time and about intention. And it's actually a really cool exercise. We did it once in 1 hour Awakening Bodhicitta series. And I think it will make us participate and be alive. And then hopefully we have some time for questions and answers and, you know, discussion, yeah, and kind of challenging and thinking and reflecting. So, let me first ring my bell. I always love to do that, just to kind of make us settle and be here and be in the present moment. So, the greening of the self. In this time of climate change, where we could face an ecological crisis, Joanna Macy encourages us to rethink our attachment to the conventional notion of the self, of the individual, encapsulated, separate self. She sees the self as a metaphorical construct of identity. That's how she calls it. Joanna hopes that this notion will be replaced by wider constructs of identity and self-interest, such as an ecological self, coextensive with other beings and the life of our planet. She calls this the greening of the South. So maybe to put this a little bit more into plain English, it is to say that she thinks that in a way our self-interest, obsessed notion of self is really very much at the basis of what isn't going right in this world. You know, it's like if we are so, I mean, it's quite interesting in this current climate of political leadership, of us first, anger, selfishness, which is kind of becoming like an endemically accepted thing. It seems we are so upset about all what's happening, we don't even think about climate anymore. Because everything is so, you know, there's so many crises that chase each other. And so, but, you know, if one thing is happening in history, it's always that another thing happens to balance it. And so in this time, it's quite interesting how a notion of interdependence and compassion is becoming also much more known in the public lingo. And so maybe the hope is that something else kind of maybe through this will grow into being and a new sense of identity. But let's understand Joanna's and the Buddha's view of interdependence as it loosens our understanding of the separate ego. The Buddha, on the day of his enlightenment, realized that life consists of a constantly changing and fluid co-rising of an unimaginable number of factors. That's really what happened to him when he sat there for 35 days under this Bodhi tree. He suddenly realized, wow, it's all co-rising, it's all connected. And it's interesting, that's what physicists tell us these days is actually the real truth, you know. So we just had to kind of come to this point in science and history. And the Buddha saw life as a continuously emerging from the stream of becoming and then fading back into the stream. So all life emerges from the stream of becoming, of creation, you might say, and then flows back into it. Here Joanna says, this is a quote, according to this deceptively simple set of assertions, things do not produce each other or make each other happen as a linear causality. They help each other happen by providing occasion or locus or context, and in so doing, they in turn are effective. There's a reciprocal dynamic at play. And I don't know if you remember this movie that was out a few years ago, What the Bleep, something like that, which I think had that notion, you know, a butterfly flutter in one part of the world affects a butterfly, affects something else in a very different part of the world. And so coming away from this notion what only matters is me and my near and dear ones, but to see ourselves, experience ourselves as part of this very fluid, interconnected flow of life. So the Buddha showed us how everything co-arises in interaction. The reality we experience ascends from what we bring to it, our input, effort, mood, and awareness. And from what comes towards us, which could be other people, circumstances in the environment, or nature. So it's not only that we are interdependent, but that how we contribute, how we live, what our intention is actually important. Why not that we can, who is this Mark Nepo poem? We are not gods that carve out rivers, but we are pebbles awakened in the stream. You know, we are pebbles awakened in the stream, but we are, you know, our contribution is important. And life is changing as we participate in it. And this is an important point to realize, that not only everything is interdependent, but that we are changing the whole system, even ever so slightly, through our participation. This realization can awaken us from our slumber of just soldiering through life unconsciously. And this insight can awaken and invigorate us. So how do we as a self fit in this context? So according to Joanna, the self reveals itself as a changing fluid construct created by the dynamics of the mind arising out of the field of becoming and falling back into it. In this way, the self is a co-arising process rather than a separate entity. Some of us may worry that this would make us all the same in a uniform way. You know, do we now lose our identity? This does not mean that we are all the same. And I'm actually quoting here Michael Carney when he says, "I find these ideas exciting and reassuring, to see self as a fluid, porous, connected and co-arising in a dance of mutual differentiation in an ever more diverse and vital family of life." And I really like that term, which is actually from Joanna. She came up with that in one morning breakfast we had with her, mutual differentiation. There's mutual belonging. We all belong mutually to each other. But in that mutual belonging, we encourage each other to differentiate, but not against each other, but with each other. And thinking that all is flow does not mean that all is one or the same. Greater and greater differentiation is also part of that flow. And I was just thinking, I was last year, was it, at a conference with Cynthia Borgo on Teha de Jadung, and what he said was kind of similar to that. So in terms of the self, there is no permanent, solid, separate self. It doesn't mean that there's only void, or that we are nothing. It just means we are not permanent, solid, and separate. And there's a self, but it is not what we thought it was. And what most of my life and behavior and self-care has been oriented around. And I remember when I first in 1980 ended up in this monastery in Sri Lanka. And I remember it wasn't a very happy time of my life. I really hated med school and was at odds with my family and just was a little bit of a not so happy young adult. And I just remember kind of letting go in these few months of my separate solid self felt actually like huge relief. Like, good riddance. Now we can, you know, start over again. So when the Dalai Lama teaches, he often emphasizes that compassion originates in our understanding that we are interdependent with everything else alive. Because we are interbeing with all of life, compassion is our natural response. Because in a way we can only be cruel and cold and dismissive towards others if we are thinking we are better than others. We are separate and better. You know, then we can objectify. Then we can cast out. Then we can disregard. But if we think, like Wolf and Lisa, who will be coming here in a few weeks, that all is relative, then in a way we care automatically. So here Joanna Macy says, the core teaching of Gautama is Paticca Samuppada, which is Pali. We are not separate. We are made of relationships. We change from moment to moment because of that. We grow strong through our connections with others and the web of life. We come to see our world as exquisitely precious, as mother, lover, dearest child. And maybe just to explain that a little more, there is this book by Joanna Macy, World as Lover, World as Self. And she says, historically, we have seen the world in different ways. We have seen it as battleground, you know, where we are fighting over countries, land. We have seen it as sewage, you know, where we can dispose of our toxic waste. or we can see it in a romanticized way, you know, as lover, you know, like maybe the romantics did, or maybe the new nature romantics can do too. But what would be important if we see it as self, you know, if we really understand interdependence, then we know this earth is our self. And that's why we can't disregard it. Wisdom gives us insight into our interdependence, but compassion is how our heart perceives it. The longing for the care and welfare of others begins to make abundant sense then. So we begin to see that not only are we inseparably connected with people and the environment around us? We are connected with the air we breathe, the food we eat, the vendors who sell the food to us, the farmers who raise the cattle or harvest the vegetable, and so on. You know, if we just see what we are wearing today, you know, how many people, how many materials were used so that we could come here today with clothes on. You know, it's very interdependent. So His Holiness the Dalai Lama puts it like this: all things and events, including our experiences of suffering and happiness, arise from the coming together of a multiplicity of causes and conditions. If we really understand our interdependent nature, compassion flows from that insight naturally. There's always a temptation to go into denial, to let our fear make us become rigid, to circle our wagons, and to scapegoat others. And Joanna tells us that to lean into our pain, into the awareness of the woundedness of our world, is the way forward. Here she says, as our hearts break open, there will be room for the world to heal. As our hearts break open, there will be room for our world to heal. To allow for this openness for our world, we need to feel the pain in our hearts and bodies. And Joanna is very strong on that. We have to experience what we might call the felt sense of what is going on. So what is this felt sense? Psychologist Eugene Gentling, I think sensory awareness or so, called the felt sense a special kind of internal bodily awareness, a body sense of meaning, which the conscious mind is initially unable to articulate. The felt sense not only brings us into the present moment, the moment we experience the felt sense of painful feelings is exactly when change can happen. The felt sense helps us to recognize when we are afraid, hurt, angry, or ashamed, and helps us to gain insight into the meaning of that experience for us. The depth of this understanding allows us to access the ability to extend compassion to ourselves and others. Then something in our way of being starts to reconfigure and gain a healthier understanding of ourselves and the world. And here Joanna says, this extension of our reality comes not only through a desire to be altruistic, but simply by being present with our pain. Then we can realize, and again this is a quote, I am not other than what I am experiencing. I am this breathing, I am this moment, and it's changing, continually arising the fountain of life. And then we realize that our world is our body. When we allow ourselves to experience this ecological self, we have a choice. Because if we allow ourselves to see ourselves as part of the bigger flow, quote again, with this extension comes a sense of buoyancy and resilience from this inner web in which we live life, our inner resources, such as courage, endurance, ingenuity, flow through us if we let them. They come like an unexpected inner blessing. And I have experienced that, especially during this time of fire and mud. I remember the fire when it was, the air was really, really thick and everybody just felt really contracted and you know, staying at home. And I remember it was really difficult, but we thought, well, it would be good to have a meditation evening, you know, just a safe place for people to come to. And it was hard because the museum was closed, and then Trinity again came to the rescue and sat here. And it was just, I remember it really worked a bit like an antidepressant for me to have, to organize and have that evening, you know, to kind of live that kind of interdependence. And I remember everybody else felt better. So developmental biologist Robert Wright's recent bestseller, I don't know, in the bookshelves it has been really big, Why Buddhism is True, has anybody seen that? It's kind of one of the books that's really fashionable right now, struck me with the argument that for millenniums it may have been to our evolutionary advantage to be greedy, selfish, and delusional in our perception of ourselves and reality. They are still in the last century. Boosting up our egos and grasping for ourselves what we can may have advanced our families or tribes' position a long time ago. And this has brought the gravest suffering to many parts of our world. Elizabeth can tell us a lot about that. In our own country, with power mongering, threatening, and us first attitudes, our nation is in a state of divisiveness, confusion, and heightened anxiety. And Wright, who is an evolutionary biologist or developmental biologist, has an interesting recommendation for us. As genetic evolution is too slow to save us now, we need to engage in cultural evolution, meaning we need to cultivate attitudes that help our societies to transform and our planet to survive and heal. And I think that's really important. You know, we can't really wait at this point for evolution to kick in some ways. You know, we might just destroy our ecological system. So we have to really now cultivate other attitudes, like an identity as an ecological self. There is this old Native American story about a grandfather and his grandson. They see two wolves fighting. One wolf is angry and hostile, and the other one sweet and kind. The boy asks his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" And the grandfather answers, "The one we feed." So in our world, there's the question, which wolf will win? The wolf of selfishness and destruction, or the wolf of generosity and caring? And I guess it's our responsibility to feed the right wolf. I was wondering, let me just see the time. Do we have time for just a little meditation? Good. Make yourself comfortable. Rest in the sensations in your body. Notice the touch between your body and the chair, the ground. Check in with your body and see what you feel. And allow your whole body to be filled with presence, with awareness. And from this field of awareness, notice breath brushing through. Expanding with the inhale, letting go with the exhale. Feel the sensation and movement of breath. And allow breath to breathe you. Feel your face, your arms, the outline of your body. The touch between body and earth or ground. And earth and body. Feel breath brushing through. The contact between body and breath, breath and body. Be aware of the space in this room, within and amongst us. Breath being breathed into this space, shared by all of us.
notice breath brushing through. Now for a moment, imagine the walls of this building gone and us all sitting here in direct contact with earth, sky, and the trees around us. Imagine your breath, all our breath, touching the trees of this land. The trees are receiving carbon dioxide and in exchange releasing oxygen. We are hungry for this oxygen, which we are breathing in with the inhale. Rest in this reciprocal exchange. As you are feeling your breath going in and out, be aware of the interdependence between body and breath, trees and land. You may long for a sense of belonging in life. There may be a yearning for home, for kinship, for meaningful relationship, for being part of a life in safety. Feel your own yearning for a sense of belonging towards yourself. Extend a hand towards yourself and allow yourself to be held in your own caring. As breath flows through, rest in the sense of being carried by life. And allow yourself to surrender, to be part of this living earth. The earth that is so patient with us. Breathing in with the in-breath, breathing out with the out-breath. Breath breathing you. Let yourself experience what you receive from Earth and recognize what you are longing to give back to it. Now notice what you feel and don't be surprised if you experience a sense of hurt or pain, of caring, or even love. Then imagine for one moment the possibility of being seamlessly connected to everyone and everything, like being part of an immeasurably huge, mysterious web. Like a plankton in the sea of life. Within this experience of being held in the spacious field, come back to pockets of separateness or of difficulties or pain, loss, that we and our earth are currently experiencing, because they too are part of the tapestry of life. Send out feelings of compassion, caring, and let the waves of mutual belonging touch everything. Breathing in with the in-breath, breathing out with the out-breath, breath breathing you. Feel what it feels like to allow this experience, to allow the sense of belonging. Gently breathing in and gently breathing out. Breath breathing you. Thank you. Let's have our break. For is it 15 minutes? 15 minutes. And then let's come back to our exercise, and then I'd love to have a good discussion. Mm-hmm.